Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming to you deep in the mountains of Missouri Ozarks on Sunday, the second day of November 2008. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Well, we got a little change of pace today. We're having a regular guest the first half hour. That's Professor McCanny. I'll be bringing him up on board after, on the air here after the first break. Professor McCanny has been doing a series. I think this week was the fourth week of a series on what goes on in our solar system, what happens when a large foreign object comes into our solar system, how it interacts with our various planets, our sun, and ourselves electrically and with gravity and so forth. It'll be fascinating to get caught up with Professor McCanny when he comes up here after the first break. And it's going to be fun. Without further ado, we have standing by Professor James McCanny, a credentialed scientist, a gentleman who knows more than anybody who's willing to talk publicly, at least, about what really goes on in space concerning the things that we're very concerned about, what's coming at us. Jim, are you there, sir?
John, how are you?
Good, good. If my engineer could turn up my audio a bit, I would really appreciate it. Well, you've been doing this series I mentioned on your radio show, and I think this is the fourth week this week.
This past week was the fourth week.
I know you don't have time to listen to my show all the time, but I'm always having people ask me on the air, off the air, emails, in person, what's Jim saying about this foreign object and coming into our solar system, also called the 10th planet? How does it interact? What's it going to do to us? And I understand you start out thinking it would be a three-part series. Now it's you're not even giving a time how many parts it's going to be, are you?
Well, yeah, I started out, and every time I get to a topic, I start going into more and more detail, and I'm realizing that, you know, people can read my books, they can watch the DVDs, but, you know, and I can see all this stuff happening in my head because I'm a physicist and I understand how physical processes work in outer space and plasma physics, but the people out there don't. And so I'm trying to fill in the blanks, give a lot more detail regarding how these physical processes work in outer space, and therefore how the ancients, when they would tell us something, say they said the Earth was rumbling or the ocean lifted up and came across the land, what are the physical processes from an object that comes by us in the solar system, what are the physical processes that cause this to happen so that they really understand from a physics point of view in terms that the layman can understand what is going on, what happened to the ancients, and what could happen to us in the future?
Absolutely. Now, the thing that you're always getting this thrown at you, I'm having it thrown at me, people want a date, and I know you don't give out a date. I don't give out a date. We talk about a time frame in the general sense of the word, but no specific dates, especially December 2012, correct?
Correct. Yeah, the situation is also there is not just one Planet X object. There are many of them. And we see these things coming in the solar system all the time. You have to remember that it's a very, very big, empty solar system we live in, and space in general is very empty. So when things come through the solar system, the chance that something's going to come very near us is pretty remote.
Right.
But it does happen. There's a lot of stuff flying around out there. And NASA has a program. Literally, they've found hundreds of these already in their embarking on searches, automated searches with equipment to search for more, and they expect to find thousands of these, Planet X-type objects.
The objects that you're describing right this moment, how large do they need to be before they reach the size of being included in this hundreds or thousands?
Well, probably, let's say, the size of the smaller moons of the solar system. So maybe, 500 miles across.
Okay, well, that's a pretty good-sized chunk of rock.
Oh, yeah, it is. And, see, the thing is, they don't necessarily have to hit us. In fact, it's pretty rare that something that size hits us. but they will come by relatively closely. And that's what I've been describing. And what I've done on my show, for example, is I took an object the size of Earth. We can all kind of relate to something the size of Earth.
Right.
And it's about six times more massive than our moon. So take an object like that, and let's let this object hypothetically come by Earth at the same distance as the moon is, 450,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And let's bring it by at a relatively low speed, about 2,000 miles an hour.
Okay.
So that's just kind of a close passage of an object the same size as Earth at about 2,000 miles an hour. And then I talk about the earthquakes, the tidal waves in the land and the ocean, and what would an object like that do? Then what I do is I speed it up. This is kind of like a computer simulation in your head.
Okay.
I said, let's speed it up. Let's let it go a little farther away. Let's let it go, come by a little closer until we get it down to, say, a quarter the distance of the moon, and say now all of a sudden we have an object five times the Earth, and it's coming by at 10,000 miles an hour, five times the speed of the original object, and it's coming by at one quarter the distance to the moon at about 10,000 miles an hour. All of a sudden, and this object, let's say, is five times the mass of the Earth, all of a sudden, it's about 10,000 times as much devastation as the original object that was just the size of the Earth passing the distance to the moon. So I'm going through these multiple examples to give you an idea of what these kind of objects can do, and they have done this in the past. We have the big mass extinctions, the dinosaurs, the mastodons, and many big mass extinctions in the past. We didn't have any direct collision with Earth necessarily. NASA always wants to say that, oh, it was an asteroid that collided into Earth. Well,
right.
Most cases it was not. It was some big object passing nearby.
Right.
And so I'm trying to give people a physical idea of what this is going to be like. And now I'm going to start getting into the electrical effects. I've only been talking about gravitational effects.
Jim, you're hitting the high points here. You know, this is hours and hours of lectures. Give people your website so they can read what you've got that's written and get to your radio show.
Yeah, the website is www.jmccs, as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. Seven letters, jmccsci.com. And all of the shows are archived there.
And there's a link from my website also, real easy, point and click.
Yeah, that's the way to get there. If go to John's website, find the link to my website, and click, and then you'll be sure to get there.
Absolutely. Now, you have a live broadcast once a week. Tell us about that.
It's Thursday evening. It airs out of Nashville, WWCR shortwave. The frequency is 5.070 megahertz, and it's Thursday evening, 6 p.m. Central Time.
Is there still a live internet broadcast?
Now the WWCR has streaming.
Okay.
You just go to WWCR. 2 hours later on realityradionetwork.com, it streams live. Also, that's a real good stream, realityradionetwork.com, and that's at 8 p.m. Central Time on Thursday evening. And then it all replays once again on Friday night at also on WWCR, but on Tower 4. It's 5.890 is the frequency on Friday night at 10 p.m. Central Time, and then once again at 3 a.m. on Saturday morning, 5.890 frequency.
Well, that's a lot of exposure, and that's exactly what you need to get your message out. It's such an important
message. Yeah, it's really getting out there, because Tower 4 and Tower 3 have a little different footprint of who receives the signal real well. 5.070, of course, is the big 100,000-watt tower. And
I've driven past that tower, Jim, and I'm a ham radio guy, and I kind of appreciate this. You drive from a mile away, you look at this thing and say, oh, my goodness, I've never seen a radio tower look anything like this. It's
yeah.
huge. It's massive.
Yeah, and just to give people an idea, of course, shortwave bounces around the world. There's a station on I'm on regularly out of Minneapolis here as a guest. It's WCCO, and they have a 50,000-watt transmitter. It's in the AM band, and after 10 p.m., they can crank up to full power.
Right.
And that station is heard in Mexico, Puerto Rico, Cuba, the Caribbean, all the way up through the eastern United States, east of the Rockies, and
yep.
into Nova Scotia and up into northern Canada.
Yep.
That's
yep.
a 50,000-watt AM station.
Yep.
The WWCR Tower 3, the 50570, is 100,000 watts, plus it's shortwave, which, so, you know,
so
I get response.
It propagates entirely differently, right?
Yeah, it's goes all over the world, so it's like a pretty good classroom out there.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm really pleased to hear that. This coming week, you'll be continuing your lecture on action at a distance. What are you going to be covering specifically?
Well, now? I'll be finishing off the gravitational effects, and I'll be starting the electrical effects. And I gave an example of one of the electrical effects. When Moses was standing near the Red Sea, the waters were sloshing back and forth due to the gravitational effects, and the pillar of fire is something that's very well recorded in history, and these are big electrical discharges coming down to the surface of the Earth from the comet, and they form these big whirlwinds like a tornado, basically.
Oh.
And I was recalling that, I don't know if you ever saw back in, I think it must have been in the 50s, the Charlton Heston
oh,
original
sure.
Moses movie.
Of course. I can't.
And
it's not America not to say that.
Yeah. they had a wonderful rendition of this pillar.
Jim, hold that thought. Hold on. We'll get to that rendition when we get back from this break. Stay tuned, everybody. Be right back. McCanning was just describing the rendition and the Ten Commandments of the Pillar of Fire. Go ahead, Jim.
Right, and in the movie Moses, the Charlton Heston version from the 50s, they showed the Pillar of Fire. And, of course, when I was a kid and saw this, and of course, when most people look at this, they think, oh, these are, you know, things we can't understand, when in reality, these were very real effects, and you can explain them in terms of physics. A lot of my weather work revolves around the fact that weather systems, including tornadoes, are driven by electrical currents from the ionosphere, and that's why around tornadoes you always see a lot of electrical effects and up in the cone of the tornado. Well, this was a cosmic tornado, basically, and due to an electrical discharge towards Earth, from this passing comet. So this is where we get into the electrical effects. And
well,
you have to understand this big comet, we're in the comet tail, so everything is clouded and shrouded and dark. And they're seeing this, you know, these amazing effects and live through it to tell the tale.
Now, Jim, at that point in time, obviously they were in the Sinai Desert and they could see what they could see. Would there have been more than one of these phenomena at that same point in time?
Yes. Yeah, there's you see these things. For example, you can see the burn marks on Mars, and they are in a line. They'll burn across a line. And, for example, on Mercury, when they took recent pictures of the planet Mercury, you'll see like a major volcanic cone, which is actually burned. It was erupted as the burn, the electrical discharge hit that spot. But all
wait a minute. The electrical discharge caused the volcano to erupt?
Well, it burned a hole basically in the planet.
Right.
But you can see a very long line that crosses the entire planetary surface. And along that line, every now and then you'll see a volcano erupting from where it got rather intense and burned through the surface. And Mars has these, every planet that we see out there that has a surface, a dry surface, you see these. And so the volcanic cones, calderas, are in a line, and that's where this electrical discharge literally swept across the planet burning holes as it went and snapping and discharging, just like any electrical discharge that you might see in a laboratory.
That would be pretty scary stuff to be around that happening.
Well, a lot of people died in that, and the people that lived through it, of course, were very fortunate. You know, it was a matter of some people did survive that, and we know a lot about many of the other civilizations around the world
right. That
talk about this, the Chinese dragon, the Thunderbird of the American Southwest, Quetzalcoatl of the Mayans and Incas, and carried over to the Aztec. All of these represent the giant comet.
Okay. Well, the thing on everybody's mind is how much time we got before we start seeing an increase in these events that are going to be affecting the average person.
Well, I personally don't know, and I have my feelers out, and I've always told people that if I have some solid information to transfer to people, I'll give it. But there's, as you said at the beginning of this show, that there's a lot of people running around saying, oh, 2012 and, you know, Mayan calendar and all of this. And believe me, this is all a bunch of, I call them wannabes, people that have no clue what they're talking about, no understanding, and they're just trying to get attention. Some of them are government disinformation programs that are out there. But if I had a real date, real solid information, I would give it out. But even if you know where these comets are at a given point in time, their orbits change quite dramatically. So it's very hard to predict where they're going to be.
Let's get your website out here, Jim. We're almost at the bottom of the hour.
www.jmccsci.com, 7 letters, J-M as in Mary, C-C, there's 2 C's, S is in Sam, C is in Charlie, I is in indigo.com, 7 letters.
Outstanding. And, of course, there's a link from my website, thelibertyman.com. Well, we're just about out of time here. Jim, I appreciate your taking the time from your Sunday afternoon to visit with us and give us an update. And I want to encourage everybody to tune in to Jim's show live Thursday evening at what time?
Is that 6 p.m. Central time.
6 p.m. Central. Outstanding. Okay.
And all the archives are on the webpage also.
It's an education. It's an absolute education. Thank you, sir. Have a good afternoon.
Take care, John.
Okay, see you. Okay, that was Professor McKinney, and we're going to try to get Jim on at least once a month. I haven't always been diligent about that, but things are speeding up, and we need to be doing that. You heard Professor McKinney earlier in the show. He and I are in agreement. We've talked about this privately, that by 2012, most of the Earth changes that we're concerned about are either going to be already over or so well underway it won't make any difference. My confidential sources in the government, and you can do a Google search on this yourself. Put this in Google, CIA in Denver. You'll find the CIA's press releases. You can't hide moving thousands of people and their families. You can't hide that, so they got press releases. They're moving from Langley, Virginia on the East Coast, 85 feet above sea level, to the middle of the continent, Denver, Colorado, 5,000 feet above sea level. And they're not saying publicly why. The publicly stated reason now is, quote-unquote, for operational reasons. They're not even telling their own people. My sources inside the CIA, they say, John, they're not even telling us. They say, if you want a career, you want a pension, pack up your bags and move to Denver. That's happening right now, not in 2011, in preparation for 2012. These events are well underway, and the continuity of government planning is due to be complete in 13 months, not in 36 months. Continuity of government is due to be complete in 13 months. The time to prepare, the time to get ready, is now. I've been a guest on Dr. Bill Deagle's show several times recently. He wants to have me on even more frequently on Genesis. Bill and I talk about this a lot. And I talk about it. I've been talking about it for several years now.